Hey everybody, welcome to the show. It's me, your host, your buddy, Dave Splash, bringing you the Dark Stuff Podcast. We're at episode 103, and on this episode I'm going to bring you an interview with a really, really talented guy named Josh Hayden. Now Josh Hayden, you may know the name, you may not know the name, I don't know. I don't know your experience with music, I don't know what you listen to, but he formed a group in the mid-90s called Spain. And their debut album, The Blue Moods of Spain, is in my top 10 albums of all time. The album, put simply, is perfection. It's great from the start to finish. There's not a second of wasted space on that album. There's not a second of unnecessary music or unnecessary noise or unnecessary anything. It is absolutely, hands down, just amazing. And I encourage everyone listening to this to find a copy of the album and to make sure you purchase it. I don't care whether you buy it on CD. I don't care whether you find it on digital or what have you. It doesn't make any difference. This interview was originally conducted back in 2008. And similarly to Podcast 102, where I interviewed Eddie Spaghetti from Super Suckers, this was another lost interview. I had contacted Josh about doing the interview. We did the interview. It's about an hour long. And as I was prepping it, I had cut it into pieces and I was getting ready to sequence it for a show. And my computer crashed, as I said last time. And I assumed that the whole thing was gone because I could not find it anywhere. Turns out, a few weeks ago, here in 2014, I found the interviews that I had lost. There were three of them, and this is the second one that I'm bringing out. And although a lot has changed since 2008 in terms of the nature of the band Spain, because at the time I was interviewing Josh, he was reforming the band. They were working on new music at the time, and they hadn't been active for a while. He'd done some solo work, and he'll get into that in the show. Spain itself, you know, they haven't had a ton of commercial success, but they've had a lot of critical success. The most recognizable song that the band has recorded is a song called Spiritual, which you may know. It was covered by Johnny Cash on one of his albums that he did for American Recordings, one of the Rick Rubin records, and it was really, really amazing. Even if you didn't know the original song, it's moving when you hear Johnny Cash sing it. And, you know, having Johnny Cash cover one of your songs has got to be a career highlight for pretty much anybody. It's really, really great. The original, no slouch either. Now let me just tell you, it's brilliant. Again, Blue Moods of Spain, brilliant record. The band took 4 years to follow it up with a record called She Haunts My Dreams, which is practically as good. It's really, really good. They had a third record in 2001. They basically broke up. And like I said just a little bit ago, we were in the process of, I'm part of it. The band was in the process of reforming when I initially interviewed Josh. And so the interview talks about his early career. It talks about the formation of Spain, the group that he had before Spain, which this was really new information to me, that as a teenager, Josh was in the band Treacherous Jaywalkers. Now, you might not remember the name, but they were an SST band from the 80s. And if you're like me, any SST band from the 80s, even the obscure ones like Treacherous Jaywalkers or Tar Babies or whatever, were still really, really good bands. That label was just peaking at that point. Josh comes from a very, very musical family, a very celebrated musical family. His father is Charlie Hayden, a celebrated jazz bass player who's probably best known for collaborations with the avant-garde saxophonist Ornette Coleman, who's something of a legend in the jazz world himself. He's got three sisters, and they were in the group. They formed the indie pop group in the 90s, That Dog, and they still work in various forms in music. There was just a record a couple years ago, the Hayden Family, that had all the sisters, had Josh on it, had Charlie on it. His mother, whose name I don't know, I can't remember off the top of my head, also a famous musician in her own right. So it seems like he was destined to do something musical here, being a member of the Hayden family. So the interview is really great. It is a little bit behind. Let me tell you what's happened since then. They were reforming the band at the time. They did reform it. They've released a couple of new records. There was a record called The Soul of Spain, which came out in 2012. There's another record called Sergeant Place, which is brand new, which is from 2014. Now, as of this recording, I haven't heard that record yet. I'm hoping to hear it relatively soon. All of the band's recordings, by the way, are available at the website SpainTheBand.com. And they have players, at least. You can listen to it. I highly recommend doing it, buying anything you can. If you get the opportunity to see the band, I would say take that opportunity. Don't miss it. It will be a special experience. And we're going to cut this interview into two pieces because we spoke for about an hour. And I like to keep these podcasts about, you know, no longer than 30 minutes. So this episode 103 will be part one, and then episode 104 will be part two of the Spain interview. So let's just go ahead and get to it. Here is my interview with Mr. Josh Hayden from Spain. Enjoy.
Hey, this is Eddie Spaghetti from the greatest rock and roll band in the world, the Super Suckers.
Hey, this is Joe from the Mises.
This is Adam Franklin from Slow Driver.
This is Artie Lang from the Howard Stern Show.
Hey, this is John from the Fag.
Hey, this is Rick Kubik, drummer from Natarone.
This is Josh Hayden from Spain.
Matt Sharp from The Rentals, and you are listening to...
And you're listening to The Dark Stuff Podcast.
And you're listening to The Dark Stuff Podcast.
The Dark Stuff Podcast.
So, all right, well, thanks a lot for agreeing to do the interview with me.
Of course.
Much appreciated.
And I like your blog. I was checking it out earlier.
Oh, really? Thank you.
Yes,
thank
cool.
You. So, if you're ready, I guess we'll just go ahead and start at the beginning. And I guess I'll start with by asking, you know, I know that you come from a musical family with your dad being a successful jazz musician. How did you get started with Spain? What groups had you played with prior, and how did you meet the guys that you formed the band with?
In 1988, 89, I started at college, University of California, Irvine, and I lived on campus housing, and I was assigned to an apartment, because I put on my resume that I was a musician. They paired me with a guitarist, this guy named Ken Budakian, and, it just happened that the way we approached music was similar, so we started just working on songs, and he had a cassette 4-track machine, and up until that point I had been playing in a, like, since I was a teenager, I was in a band called the Treacherous Jaywalkers, which was sort of like a punk rock band in the tradition of Minutemen and the more kind of experimental side of what punk rock had become.
Well, sure. You guys had, you were on SST, right?
Yeah.
Okay. I remember the band. I didn't know that was you. I didn't know that was you.
No, that was me, and it was me and a guy named Quinn Haber on guitar and James Fenton on drums, and we had been together as a band probably since I was like 15 years old, and by the time I was around, you know, 20, 21, I started wanting to, I don't know if it, go into a different musical direction. And, so that at that point, like, in like, I have no good explanation for it, but around 1990 or so, I started writing songs that were not, punk rock songs. They were more blues based, and they were slow. They were slower than, they had like slow tempos I did a complete about face on the subject matter I was writing songs about, going from political issues to personal issues. I don't know if they can be separated, but I stopped writing about political issues entirely, and when I got out of college, I started seriously thinking about, you know, could I put a band together to play these new songs I have, and would people like it?
Okay.
So at the time, this was in the early 90s, at the time my sisters had a band called That Dog.
Sure, I remember them.
And this was like before, like right when they were first getting together, and before they recorded their first single, they would, Anna and my sisters would have band practice at my mom's house, and I would kind of, you know, sit in the corner and listen to what they were doing, and a lot of what they were doing was pretty, acoustic-based and pretty slow, kind of dreamy kind of stuff. And I thought, well, and they were starting to get some notice in the clubs in L.A., and I was thinking, you know, if they can do this, I can do it. So
now, are you the older sibling or younger than?
Yeah, I'm the older sibling.
Okay, you're the older one. Okay.
And so I had been writing songs, you know, this whole time, and even recording them with Ken, but I didn't really think about putting a band together. And so, you know, one day I decided I'm just gonna find a drummer and another guitarist and see what happens. And that's how Spain started.
And that was probably, so the lineup was probably finalized, what, like maybe 92, 93, somewhere around there?
Probably like 93.
Okay. And then did you go the traditional route of playing out and getting a following and trying to get a record deal, or how did it come about that you got involved with Restless Records and started recording as Spain?
I mean, exactly, you know, we did the route that most bands take, which is that they make a demo and they send it to a club and the club books them. And I already had an advantage because of That Dog, and That Dog would put us on bills opening for them. And so we already, it was easy for us to start playing gigs.
Oh, sure.
But we built from there, we there's this lady, Liz Garrow, who worked for Restless at the time, and she heard us at Spaceland. It's club in Silver Lake here in LA, which at the time was called TAM, and she invited me over to Restless to their office and said, you know, that they were interested in signing us. And that's how that happened. I think it was pretty quick.
Sure.
And
that was probably around 93, 94?
Actually, I think that was 94. If I'm not mistaken, we recorded the record, the first Spain record, Blue Moods, in January of 95.
Okay.
I could be mistaken. I think that was when we recorded it, and it was released in September of 95, pretty sure.
Okay, now it says it was produced by you and Norman Kerner. Who is Norman Kerner, and how did you get involved with him?
Norman Kerner was and still is a producer, and he was at the time based in San Francisco. He was known for producing bands like American Music Club and other San Francisco area bands, and his studio was renowned for its sonic properties.
Okay.
It was an old metal foundry that was converted into a recording studio. So the tracking room was had these really high ceilings, and it had a very unique sound, which you can hear in the recording. I don't know how Liz knew Norman Kerner personally, or how, if she'd ever talked to him or worked with him before in the past, but that was who Restless suggested we work with, and I talked to Norm, and it seemed like everything would work out, and it did.
Okay. How long were you in the studio making the album?
Probably about a month.
And was it recorded in Los Angeles or in San Francisco?
No, in San Francisco.
Okay.
At his studio. It was called Brilliant Studios. And shortly after we finished recording, there was a big earthquake in San Francisco, and the building was so badly damaged that it had to be torn down. So the studio doesn't exist anymore.
Oh, well, were you the last project that recorded there?
I don't think so.
Okay. Okay, so the first record is done, The Blue Moods of Spain, and it came out. I remember hearing it at the time and was just amazed by it. It didn't sound like anything else that I had heard, you know, coming out. And there were bands that were slower, like Low or Red House Painters or something like that, but I felt like the record was just extremely unique, and it had kind of a jazz feel too, in addition to being slower pop music. Do you see it that way too, and with the first record?
It's funny because in retrospect, I don't see very many similarities between the Blue Moods record and Red House Painters, the records that Red House Painters and Low were putting out at the time, other than the similarities in the tempo. But in interviews, people in general were making comparisons between us and Low and Red House Painters.
I think it has everything to do with the tempo. You're right. It's it's just because it's slow, and those are easy reference points. You know that
right.
It's slow. If you're fast and loud and catchy, rock, you sound like Husker Du. That's just a throwaway reference.
Right.
You know,
exactly.
A lot of bands do that.
Exactly.
So.
Yeah.
Well, who were you guys? Were there any bands, rock bands or pop bands that you were heavily inspired by? Or when you said you sort of moved into this new sound after the Treacherous Jaywalkers?
Yeah.
Were there any records that you listened to that sort of sparked that maybe helped you spark that change?
Well, it was me starting to pay attention to music that I listened to when I was a kid, but that I had rejected most kids reject when they get older, they reject what they grew up with. I rejected classical music and jazz and blues and gospel that I had grown up listening to for punk rock music, which I had a concept in my mind that I was creating a new genre of music with the Treacherous Jaywalkers, but I hadn't fully, I don't know, come to terms with my musical roots. And I think that part of what Spain was about was me, you know, confronting my musical roots and, you know, doing and completing what I was meant to do.
Sure. And you know, you're referring to because of your dad.
Both of my parents.
Yeah. Your mom is a musician as well?
Yeah. Well, she came from a musical family also.
Okay.
And she did play musical instruments, and her parents were and I played mandolin in a mandolin orchestra. So I had, you know, music from both sides of my family. And what really did it for me was before I started at UC Irvine, I was at a community college called Santa Monica College in Santa Monica, California, and I got a job as a assistant music librarian at a radio station called KCRW.
Okay,
so
you've heard of that.
And I was all of a sudden exposed to music from all over the world that I had never listened to before, and all genres of music that I needed to go back and pay attention to. So to me, it was like rediscovering John Lee Hooker and Muddy Waters and rediscovering great classical composers and classic country music, and also contemporary bands, especially a group called Cowboy Junkies.
Sure.
That I would say was, as far as like my peers at the time, that would be the biggest influence on putting Spain together and arranging the songs, and it was kind of like a reference point for me.
Now, was the group assembled to sort of kind of complete your vision, or was it really a band in the traditional sense of everybody's kind of, you know, contributing? I mean, I know it says you wrote all the songs. Was it sort of a vehicle for you and your material, or was it, I mean, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but how did you see it that in that sense?
One of the reasons I felt Treacherous Jaywalkers didn't work was because it had an idealized vision of, it was kind of like an idealistic conception of how a band could operate in a perfect world, which was, it was basically a democracy. And with Spain, what I wanted to do was, you know, go in a direction that I was more in control of. So Spain was and still is a democracy in the sense that everybody has their input, and if somebody has a song idea that works within the framework and the parameters that the band is set up in, then that's cool, but ultimately, I have to, you know, have the final say if something works or doesn't.
Well, sure. Even a democracy has a president.
Yeah. but maybe not a democracy so much as some kind of ordered anarchy, maybe.
Okay.
Where everybody has to agree or nothing gets done. That's the way Treacherous Jaywalkers was, which it wasn't a bad thing, and it isn't a bad thing. I think it got to the point where I couldn't go in the direction that I wanted to go in, that I had to go in, and therefore it kind of lost its appeal to me. I think it was, you know, that also that I was getting older and, you know, evolving, and sometimes people change and things change and they just have to move on. So, so Spain in that sense is a vehicle for, a particular musical vision that I have.
Okay. Now, are you looking back on that record, which is now, I guess, almost 13 years old, are you happy with it to this day? Do you think it still stands up, the first album?
I think it does.
Okay.
I don't listen to it very often unless I'm, you know, unless the band is playing a song from it and we have to, you know, relearn it and study it. But I think it holds up pretty well.
Okay, now probably the most well-known song off the record is obviously Spiritual, and that's partially because of the version that you guys did, but also because the song was covered by Johnny Cash. Couple of questions on that. One, what was it like hearing him sing one of your songs? And two, how did that come about? How did it get into the hands of Johnny Cash or Rick Rubin to make that happen?
When I first heard it, I couldn't believe it. It was a total surprise and shock to me. Rick Rubin didn't tell me what he had planned. It was just one day he called me and played it for me over the phone. And I was like, what, Johnny Cash? Wait, repeat that? So I was pretty shocked. And the way it came about was that, you know, Rick was working with Johnny Cash, and Rick was a big fan of the Blue Moods record, and I think he played the song for Johnny Cash, and Johnny Cash liked it, and they recorded it.
And it wasn't the song was still relatively new when he did the recording, wasn't it? It was only like a year or two old, right?
Yeah.
Well, that's cool. Did that help? Help, you know, raise the profile of Spain, or was it sort of lost on most people who actually did the original?
No, it definitely raised our profile quite a bit, and still does.
Okay.
I mean, where do you go from there? You know, it's...
So did you guys tour nationally or internationally in support of the Blue Moods album?
Yes, we actually started touring in Europe before the record was released, just after, and we toured through 1996.
Okay.
So we were on the road supporting Blue Moods for quite a bit.
So now is pretty much as good a time as any to stop this episode, and we're going to do the second half of the interview in the next one, episode 104, here on the Dark Stuff Podcast. Good time to end there because we just wrapped up the talk of the album The Blue Moods of Spain. Now your homework from now until the next episode comes up in a couple of days is to get The Blue Moods of Spain if you don't already have it. Find it somewhere. Find it in a used record store. Find it in a new record store. Find it online. Find it on iTunes. I don't know if it's on iTunes, but find it anywhere you can. Get this album. Listen to it at least twice before we get back to the second interview. So for the second half of it, Josh will talk about the next couple of records, the ending of the band, initially his solo career, and some misfortune that unfortunately came with some record company problems and whatnot, and then leading up to the reformation of Spain, and that's where we're at now in 2014. So I hope you enjoyed this. We'll be back in just a couple of days with the next episode, which will be 104, part 2 of my interview with Josh Hayden from Spain.
Transfer of data is complete.